Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, you know how we've all made Facebook so profitable by posting our lives there? Does this mean we'll all get a chance to buy shares when the IPO comes out in a few days? Felix Salmon, the Reuters finance blogger, is here to tell us the answer is kinda, sorta, a little. We'll talk about J.P. Morgan's $2 billion flameout, too. Hi, Felix. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
J.P. Morgan first. What happened here? Wasn't this supposed to be the smart Wall Street firm that avoided a lot of the 2008 mess?
The firm which invented risk management, which is very nimble, and which never loses money. Absolutely, yeah. Somehow they kind of forgot all that, and then they just blew up. It was quite astonishing.
So here's CEO Jamie Dimon in a rare conference call with reporters yesterday.
Well, we can't assure you that we won't make mistakes. We can assure you we're going to try not to. These were egregious mistakes. They were self-inflicted. We were accountable. And what happened violates our own standards and principles by how we want to operate the company. This is not how we want to run a business.
Contrite, contrite, contrite. But how do you lose $2 billion in 6 weeks? Did they bet on Greece to rule the world or on the Knicks to beat Miami?
It's an incredibly good question. I've been looking into this myself, and no one's really come up with a good answer. But my latest theory on this is that it was basically something called model risk, that they had this model of how to hedge exposures. They had a certain amount of risk on their books, and they thought they were hedging that risk. And they built a hedge according to a certain model, and their model was simply wrong. And when the markets moved, they discovered that the model was wrong, and next thing they knew, they woke up in the morning with $2 billion of losses. It doesn't seem to make much sense, but that's the best I can do.
Huh. So I guess there's a lot to be reported out on this yet, because the markets, I thought, have been pretty stable or a little bit up in the last 6 weeks. The Dow is above 13,000. So what could they have been betting on that could lose them $2 billion in a six-week period?
If you remember back in the summer of 2007, there was something called the quant meltdown, where there was a bunch of quantitative hedge funds which managed to lose enormous amounts of money, like billions and billions and billions of dollars, all during a period when the stock market kind of went sideways and bonds weren't doing too badly either, because they were putting on all of these very hedged relative value trades and things. And if one stock goes up and another stock goes down, when they were betting that the first stock would go down and the second stock would go up, you can lose lots of money even when the markets as a whole aren't moving directionally in one direction or the other.
Is this the start of another national crisis or one bad Wall Street apple?
This is not the start of a crisis, but I think what it does do is it proves that banks are still taking enormous bets, that they're still taking enormous risks. And there's this piece of legislation called the Volcker Rule, which is trying to prevent banks like J.P. Morgan from taking enormous risks with taxpayer-backed funds. And this just goes to prove, because all of this trading was apparently entirely compliant with the Volcker Rule, this just goes to prove that banks are always going to be able to find loopholes and lose money somehow.
And yet the news at the top of the hour told us that the stock market is down today, largely on fears that this failure at J.P. Morgan Chase will lead to a new round of banking regulation. Do you think that's true?
I hope that's true. I mean, I hope that they'll, at the very least, I mean, it's up to the SEC largely how zealously they enforce the Volcker Rule and what kind of rules they put in place to make sure that risky trades don't get put on by banks backed by the taxpayer. And with any luck, this will be a wake-up call to the SEC, and they'll be a little bit more assiduous about that. And maybe that will reduce bank profits, and so maybe that makes a certain amount of sense.
Felix Salmon, Reuters finance blogger. And maybe they can borrow some money from Facebook, which is expected to release its IPO next week and raise an instant $5 billion is the going estimate. Here,
more than that, I think.
Maybe more than that. Here, waxing idealistic about his company, is Mark Zuckerberg.
Facebook's mission is to make the world more open and connected. And, you know, what we mean by that is that we think that people's lives are going to be better, and really that the whole world will function better, when there's more information and understanding out there about, you know, both big things that are happening in the world and local things, what's going on with your friends and the people around you.
So that's Zuckerberg from their Dog and Pony Show video for investors. And if that was the idealistic, expansive Zuckerberg on how Facebook makes the world better, here was the hard-headed dollars and cents. This is good for you, this is good for me, Zuckerberg.
Facebook is based on real identity. People are themselves on Facebook. This gives us the ability to match businesses with the people that will value their product or service. For narrowly targeted campaigns, let's say females 25 to 34, Facebook reaches the audience with 90% accuracy compared to an industry average of only 35%.
And obviously that wasn't Zuckerberg, that was Sheryl Sandberg speaking for the company. But still, this is about how Facebook is about your business being able to reach your potential customers so, so efficiently. Felix, how do you contrast those clips?
It's a great question. Facebook was always an idea first and a money-making scheme second. Like, the idea is with most of these Silicon Valley startups, first you get loads of scale and get everyone invested on your platform, and then you work out how you turn that into money. And so that's Sheryl Sandberg saying, hey, you know, Facebook is a way of connecting with people, and this is what advertisers have wanted to do throughout history, and so surely we can be a massive force for making lots of money in the future. But, you know, it has to be said, they haven't been spectacularly successful at growing their advertising revenues in the present. So you have to kind of take that on faith.
What about us 900 million or so people who have made Facebook a success by using it so much? I gather they are making some shares available for regular investors, not just the J.P. Morgan Chases of the world, to buy. Is that right?
Well, I would never recommend sort of, you know, this whole gaming IPOs, and this is financial market, you know, highly risky activity, trying to guess which direction stocks are going to move, buying individual stocks in the hope of getting a short-term pop, selling them after a couple of minutes or hours or days. That kind of activity is not really the kind of thing which your average Facebook user should be engaging in. Facebook is going to be a massive company. It's going to be worth somewhere north of $80 billion. And as such, all of the big mutual funds, all of the big index funds are going to own it automatically. So most of us are going to wind up with some kind of Facebook exposure, whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm. And there are some shares for regular investors being made available through E-Trade, I think, and one or two other companies. But you're saying this is probably not a good bet for the individual, because it's still risky Wall Street. You don't know how this mammoth is going to move up or down in the coming years. And so what? You're saying keep investing in mutual funds?
Or index funds? Yes, I think there's very little reason to believe that Facebook stock is some great bet or better than any other stock. It's trading, you know, at somewhere in, or will be trading somewhere in the region of 100 times the amount of money that it's making. You know, it would need 100 years of last year's profits to get to the value that it's likely to trade at in a couple of weeks' time on the stock exchange. So that seems expensive, and there's been reports that the appetite to buy stock at these levels is not particularly strong. I mean, we'll find out when it goes public. But you always have to remember on the stock market that every company has a price. Every company is cheap at one price and expensive at another. And unless you have some kind of a smart bead on whether Facebook is cheap or Facebook is expensive, then you can't make an informed decision about whether it's a good buy or not.
What's the expected share price going to be?
Well, that I can't tell you, but you know, somewhere in the sort of mid 30s, I think. But you know, that doesn't really mean very much. You know, it's the question is really the valuation more than the share price, and the valuation is likely to be in that sort of 80 to 100 billion range.
80 to 100 billion. So that $5 billion figure that I was citing before refers to what?
That's the amount of money that they're raising, and it could be closer to $10 billion, actually. in an IPO, what you're doing is the company is issuing stock to the public, and the public is paying for that stock with cash, and the amount of cash that the public is paying is going to be in that $5 to $10 billion range, which is a huge amount of money for Facebook, especially since Facebook is profitable and doesn't really need the money for anything in particular.
Why does Facebook need all that money, enough to even engage in this IPO if they're so capitalized?
Yeah, they have no shortage of money, and they have no shortage of ability to raise money privately. The reason they're going public is twofold. Number one, they have a large number of early backers who would like to be able to sell out quietly, and the best way to do that is if it's listed on the stock market. So that's not Facebook itself needing the money. That's Facebook's investors wanting the money. And then the second reason is they have more than 500 shareholders now, and when that happens under SEC rules, it becomes much more difficult for companies to remain private, and there's a lot of incentive for them to go public.
You've written in your blog that Zuckerberg's ability to retain complete control after raising billions of dollars from the public, which apparently he will be able to retain because he'll still have more than 50% of the shares, shows that the IPO model is broken. How so?
Well, he won't have more than 50% of the shares, but he will have more than 50% of the votes because they're setting up a dual-class voting structure where he has shares which carry lots of votes and the rest of us have shares which have very, very little voting power. So what he's basically doing here is he's saying, I want to run a private company like it's my own personal fiefdom. I want to be the king of Facebook and have everything be my own personal decision. And if I decide on a Saturday morning that I want to buy Instagram for $1 billion, then I will buy Instagram for $1 billion on Saturday morning. And there's nothing that my shareholders or my board can, you know, really do about it. They're just going to get told. And that's a very, you know, privately owned company model. And anyone buying Facebook stock is going to have to buy into that model. And it makes perfect sense if you want to be a private company, but it doesn't make perfect sense if you want to be a public company, because the whole point of a public company is that these are much more sort of democratic institutions with one shareholder, one vote, where shareholders elect a board of directors and the board of directors hires the CEO and the CEO does what the shareholders and the board want. That's absolutely not what Facebook is being set up as. And it kind of shows that that Zuckerberg and Facebook don't want to be a private company, and they're feeling forced into it, and they're trying to behave as little like a public company as possible.
One other thing regarding the user experience. I think I saw a release from Facebook yesterday that said they're going to set up something like Apple's App Store, but for Facebook, because right now it's a little confusing to know what apps are actually usable with Facebook and what apps you can buy that actually integrate.
One of the things which Facebook has done quite consistently over its life is radically change the way that people use it, the user interface, the privacy settings, you name it. Almost overnight, it will just implement brand new features, and a lot of people will often hate them, a lot of people will sometimes love them, and it doesn't sort of do a lot of user testing and A/B testing and incremental changes. It makes big changes and says, okay, this is the new Facebook, and you're just going to have to work it out. And that has been successful for Facebook in the past, and public companies tend to be a little bit more cautious when it comes to that kind of activity. Maybe this is a signal from Facebook that they're still going to just unilaterally make big changes just like they always have.
So Facebook on the rise still, J.P. Morgan with a big new debt and a big black eye. We'll see how that affects the rest of the markets. Reuters finance blogger Felix Salmon, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, formerly of the Lower Manhattan Cultural Center idea, the one that was disparaged as a, quote, ground zero mosque. Now moving on to other ways of promoting religious moderation. Imam Faisal next.